Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
In the global food industry, there are crops that end up on your plate, foods like bananas and asparagus, and then there are agricultural commodities like corn syrup or soybean oil. Commodities like these drive the processing of food and even make their way into non-food items that must be safe for human contact and consumption, shampoos, cosmetics, even toothpaste. The wide variety of uses, plus the global scale of demand, all mean that a commodity can quickly become so valuable it can transform the places where it is produced and the people who produce it. Such is the case for palm oil. A U.S. Department of Labor report on child and forced labor in 2012 identified palm oil, along with gold, seafood, and clothing, as having the worst track record on labor practices. Palm oil can be found in your own cupboards, kitchen, and bathroom. It's even more widely used in Asia. Benjamin Skinner, reporter for Bloomberg Businessweek and senior fellow at the Schuster Institute for Investigative Journalism at Brandeis University, says the story of palm oil is a 21st century update to a familiar tale of industrial greed and the temptation to turn workers into slaves.
This is one of those cases where you see a number of macro factors coming together. One of the big ones here, what we focused on, was the rising consumer giants of China and India, but particularly China. What we tried to understand was, do they care about the human costs of the products that are fueling that rise? What we found is they care deeply about the environmental costs. They care deeply about product safety. But when it comes to the human costs, and here we're talking about slavery, slaves being those forced to work, held through fraud, under threat of violence for no pay beyond subsistence, they're largely ignorant. And according to the surveys, less than 5% of Chinese actually care about the labor inputs to their goods.
And is that a lesson that these companies came up with on their own, or is it part of a traditional, shadowy, dark business model that might have something to do with the rise of other industrial commodities over the last 100 years?
I think a lot of it has to do with the breakneck growth of this particular commodity. Over the last 23 years, global usage, global consumption of palm oil has quintupled, largely thanks to, again, the booming consumer giants in China and India. And over that period, Indonesia has become the largest producer of palm oil. Indonesia is a place where these companies are quite aware, and I interviewed the CEO just a couple of days ago of the big company that we name in the story, the $3 billion company, Kuala Lumpur Kepong. And his comment about Indonesian rule of law revealed that he was perfectly aware that Indonesian rule of law was extremely weak. And for example, when it was brought to his attention, and it was brought to his attention 3 years ago, that there was somebody who was using, as he put it in quotation marks, slavery to produce the palm oil that his company was selling to China, selling all over the world, the response was to fire that individual but not to press charges. Mm. When I asked him point blank, is slavery a crime, he said absolutely. But then he went on to say, but you have to understand the Indonesian context.
There's a sense here of both ruthlessness and caginess. Mm-hmm. That I'm wondering is echoed in, a very different story of companies like Archer Daniels Midland that grew in other industrial commodities. I mean, are you seeing something fundamentally different here? Or are you seeing a kind of ruthlessness that's been repeated over and over again?
You know, what I'm seeing is a kind of opacity repeated over and over again, where there are these sort of these liability firewalls built in, where KLK says, well, this was the fault of the contractors. We didn't actually contract with those laborers. And when it came time to pay reparations to these workers, to be clear, here we're talking about at least 95, probably over 100 men, women, and children who were held in brutal conditions, locked inside on these isolated barracks in the middle of palm oil plantations in the middle of Borneo, 2,000 miles away from their home. They were beaten regularly. If they tried to run away, they were captured. They were actually, like in the antebellum South, you had slave hunters who would go out and catch these runaways and bring them back and beat them in front of the others. I mean, this is medieval.
Is there something about the production of palm oil, the harvesting of the agricultural, items that produce palm oil that is similar to the labor-intensive qualities of the cotton harvest that you've just sort of alluded to?
Absolutely. It's a labor-intensive industry. It relies on these out-of-the-way plantations in places like Indonesia, as I say, where the rule of law is weak. And fundamentally, it comes through layers. The commodity comes through layers and winds up everywhere. It's a ubiquitous product.
Are there brands in Asia that do reflect a sense of transparency and social responsibility like we've come to know with Nike and the struggle to have garment manufacturers project that their garments are manufactured in a socially appropriate humanitarian way?
On an extremely limited basis. What you do have is you have Western multinationals that sell to China and are increasingly the trusted brands. Here's the thing. In China, they care enormously about product safety. They care more than they do in the West about environmental issues. Why? Because you go to Linfen, you go to Tianjin, you have to walk around with a respirator. So increasingly, those issues are important. The problem is Chinese brands haven't caught up with that latent consumer demand.
So personally, what product with a lot of palm oil in it do you suddenly have a different relationship with based on your reporting here?
Well, one thing is I've been allergic to sodium lauryl sulfate for years, so I have a built-in aversion to that particular palm oil derivative. The truth is it's hard to find where this stuff winds up in terms of the derivatives. In many cases,
that's part of its industrial charm. It's environmentally benign. It is colorless, odorless, tasteless kind of thing, and it's very, very easy to use in a food service context as well as a consumer product context.
Well, I wouldn't say it's environmentally benign, first of all.
But you can eat it, and it's not like petroleum oil.
That's true. That's true. And it's in terms of saturated fats, it's actually much better for you than other forms of vegetable oil. So it was the preferred form of oil, of vegetable oil, over the last 20 years. The problem is all of these other social problems. Now, what we find, what I'm getting a sense of when we talk to these companies, when we go out for this story and, you know, talk to Cargill, talk to a Procter & Gamble, talk to Kraft, talk to all of the companies that we connected with the KLK oil, fundamentally there's a sense that the market will reward transparency. And this is one of these, to paraphrase Trotsky, these companies may not be interested in transparency, but ultimately when journalists get involved, transparency is interested in them.
So this article may be something of a tipping point for this industry.
We hope.
Benjamin Skinner, Bloomberg Businessweek reporter and senior fellow at the Schuster Institute for Investigative Journalism at Brandeis University. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Bloomberg asked companies with well-known brands who use palm oil about the allegations of abuse. California Oils, Kellogg, General Mills, P&G, and Unilever cited supplier codes of conduct that prohibit such practices, while Nestle and Archer Daniels Midland pledged to investigate.